After months of nurture, it's time for fresh, juicy tomatoes from the garden. That is, unless you're thwarted by blossom end rot. It's Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa State University Extension horticulturalists Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo are with us today. We'll find out what to do if blossom end rot is ruining a few of your precious. Also, some rain is good, but what has the drenching we've gotten this year done to gardens? We'll be taking your calls as well about your garden, your lawn, or your houseplants. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa. That's coming up after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturalists Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo are in the studio ready to answer your questions today. Richard, thank you so much for being here, as you always are.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot. It's good to be back with you after this is my first Horticulture Day after a decade away, so this is exciting for me. And Jennifer, this is your very first Hort Day period, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And you're going to be teaching classes at Iowa State, and you're also going to be in charge of the Master Gardener program?
That's right.
What does it take to be a Master Gardener?
It doesn't take that much except interest in gardening. You can be a novice or a very experienced gardener and apply for to become a Master Gardener. You just need to contact your local extension office to see if they're going to be offering courses this coming fall. And then you take a series of courses 8 weeks long with some additional face-to-face training. And you do 40 hours of volunteer your very first year to kind of give back for that training. So that's pretty much what it takes.
And once you accomplish that, what does that mean? What are you if you're a Master Gardener? What can you do?
There's lots of things. The first year you're called a Master Gardener intern. And then after that, once you've completed the 40 hours of volunteer service, then you become officially a Master Gardener. And then your goal is to go out into the community and help educate the public about gardening properly and answering all kinds of questions. So they Master Gardeners have projects they work on from demonstration gardens where they can show well laid out and good plant selection gardens, all the way to answering questions at farmers markets about what's going on in somebody's landscape. So quite a bit of options.
All right. Well, you do not have to be a Master Gardener to call our show today. Mm-hmm. Call us with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, I know you have been getting a lot of questions about blossom end rot and tomatoes lately. What exactly is blossom end rot?
Well, what you see on that is there's a dark brown or black spot on the blossom end of the fruit. And over time, the bottom begins to rot. And so basically, they do not fully ripen. It's very common on tomatoes, especially early on in the season. Those first fruit that form on the tomato plant are more prone to that. So when you see that, what you want to do is pick those off because they're going to rot anyway. And you don't want the plant wasting its energy on those fruits. So do that. As far as the cause is due to a lack of calcium. You typically don't have to add calcium to the soil. There's typically enough in there. What you can do is when it's dry, go ahead and water about once a week. And that's to maintain a fairly even moisture supply and also avoid over-fertilization. If you have uneven moisture supplies, if you supply too much nitrogen, that may inhibit calcium uptake. So don't do those two things. As far as blossom end rot, it can also occur on peppers and eggplants and summer squash.
Okay, so is there something you can do at the beginning of the season that might prevent that from becoming a problem?
Not a great deal. It's something that we do see, and the best that you can do is to try to maintain an even moisture supply during the growing season. And make sure you don't over-fertilize. And when it does occur, pick those off and destroy them. And so the plant can put all its energy into the remaining fruit.
All right. Well, we have phone lines filling up right now. Kay is on the line in Ames. Hello, Kay.
I'm wondering if peonies would do better with the old seeds cut off, and I'd also like to know what time of year to transplant peonies.
Well, I'll answer your question there, Kay. Thanks for the question. Yes, actually, it is a good thing to cut off the seeds of your peonies this time of year. It helps give the plant more energy back into the foliage and the roots instead of putting it into seed production. And if you wait a few more weeks, you can actually transplant your peonies in the fall. So that's the best time to dig them up. And if they need to be divided, they can be divided then and replanted.
Is there anything special you should do when you transplant them?
Not really. You can add a little bit of fertilizer if you'd like, but they do very well in our soils. So,
okay. Well, good luck with that project, Kay. We have Elsa on the line in Marland. Hello, Elsa.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I planted 3 honey locusts this spring, and all 3 of them have only leafed out halfway. Now, they're guaranteed for a year, but I'm just wondering, should I just keep waiting or what? It's, the top part has not leafed out. They're about 5-6 feet tall.
Okay. Well, if that top portion has not leafed out, most likely it won't. So you have to decide, do I want to wait and see how they develop over the next few years? They could develop into a nice tree yet. They still could. So that's a possibility. Or do you want to go back to the nursery and see what they'll say about that? But there's still a possibility that they will develop into a good tree, but you won't know for a few years. So,
okay, so I suppose wait about, well, see, we planted them this spring, so mm-hmm. we won't know next year, and they're only guaranteed for a year.
Right, so you this fall, if you're concerned about that, you may want to discuss that with the nursery and see what they'll do about that or say about that. But I would be inclined to cut out the areas that are basically bare because most likely they're dead.
And that's not, the top part.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
The top half, yeah.
Right. And if they haven't leafed out at this point, most likely they're dead. And I would prune that portion out. And like I said, maybe discuss this with the garden center and see what they'll do. Otherwise, wait till maybe next spring and see how they leaf out next spring.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Elsa. Have you seen a lot of problems this year because of all the rain, Richard?
Actually, no, for the most part. Most trees and shrubs that we planted this spring are doing fine. People didn't have to water that often. Now, they may have to the rest of this summer, possibly. It has gotten dry recently. So they shouldn't neglect that. But for the most part, this weather this spring has been good, unless they were sitting in a very, very poor wet site, poorly drained site. Otherwise, they've been doing great.
Well, my colleague Dean Borg was talking with a sweet corn producer who said that his crop had really been cut in half because of all of the rain. Have we seen yields down?
Well, as far as in the vegetable garden, you might have lower yields mainly because I think of disease. The very wet conditions in May and June, we had frequent rains, and your plant pathogens are basically there, typically in the soil. And when it rains, the raindrops hit the ground, they splatter. They splatter things onto the plants, to the foliage, and included in that might be spores. And then they land on a wet leaf surface, and they can infect the foliage. So with the frequent rains, we're seeing a lot of so-called blights on tomatoes, like septoria leaf spot, early blight, etc. So we're seeing a lot of that, and that does cause the plants to decline and die prematurely, so they won't produce as much as they normally do. They typically will go ahead and produce some, but since they're going downhill, they won't produce as much as they could.
Okay. The number to call with your questions is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have Gary on the line in Waterloo. Hello, Gary.
Hi, good morning. Say, I've got a question about moles in the garden. I just let them go because I think they do as much good as harm. What are your feelings on that?
It's up to you. Some people don't like them, and some people do, and that's completely up to you. If you like them, great, that's fine.
They'll uproot plants once in a while, but they're mostly after what, grubs, or what all do they eat?
They mainly eat earthworms.
Well, I knew that.
They will eat grubs, And so a common misconception is that if you go out there and treat your lawn with a insecticide to kill the grubs, that way you can get rid of the moles. And that's not true, because even if you get rid of every grub in the soil, they still have plenty of food as far as the earthworms. So that doesn't really work at all. So,
okay. I'm like that with everything. I like to leave as many things go as possible. It's a buggy year, though, isn't it?
In some things, it is. We're seeing a lot of mosquitoes and some other insects. Other insects don't like the wet weather, so some things haven't done as well. So,
well, Gary, I like your live and let live philosophy. I'm not a horticulturalist, but
I plan enough. I plan enough for them too.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Patty on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Patty.
And I plant phlox this time of year.
Can you plant phlox at this time of year?
Yes.
You can if you buy them in a container. If they're at the nursery growing in a container, you can still plant them. Now, if you want to move existing plants, then I would wait and do that maybe in September or early next spring. But you can still plant perennials growing in pots or containers.
What side of my house?
As far as garden phlox, typically make sure that they have at least 6 to 8 hours of direct sun each day. They don't like a lot of shade, and if you plant them in the shade, they won't die, but they won't bloom much, and they get a lot of powdery mildew.
Leave them in pots?
No, just plant them right in the ground.
Okay. And how much water?
Well, make sure they're well watered the rest of this year if you plant them this year. So I would say maybe once a week or so during the rest of the growing season. And next spring, they should be okay. They shouldn't need watering.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Patty. And I think we have time to squeeze one more in before the break. And here's Dusty on the line in Liscombe. Hello, Dusty.
Hi. I'm actually calling about, I'm doing some plant watching this week for my parents. They've got a couple of tomato plants they planted in like just 2 5-gallon buckets. And they drilled holes in the bottom and whatnot. They just didn't want to do a big garden and didn't want to mow around just a couple plants. So problem being is they need watered like 4 times a day. Otherwise, the leaves start wilting and whatnot. And I just wondered how good it is for them, because I guess I've heard that, you know, tomatoes don't like a ton of water, but it's just draining straight through. And they are producing a few tomatoes, but nothing's ripened up yet at all. There's like, I don't know, 2 or 3 big ones on each plant. But I just kind of wondered what you guys thought of that, if you had any better ideas for the bucket system like that.
Well, the main thing would be when you do water, water well, and let some of the water flow out the bottom of the container, the bucket, and then let it dry out some before you water again. I would guess if you water maybe in the morning, and if necessary, early in the afternoon, that should be sufficient for a day, I would guess.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Dusty. We'll be taking more calls coming up after this break. You're listening to Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa with Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to A Talk of Iowa on on Iowa Public Radio. I knew I was going to do that sometime. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking horticulture today, as we do every Friday. And with us are Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And we are taking your calls as well. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. And we've got Dave up next from Davenport. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Yes, I have some volunteer squash that I decided to save a couple. They were in my compost that I spread out for my tomatoes, and I had some extra space, and I had them growing up trellises, and they're blossoming out, tons of blossoms, but the blossoms are all falling off, and I've only got like one little squash, and it seems like they're just not turning into squash at all. The plants themselves are growing like crazy.
Okay. Well, two things may be involved here. One is that the squash and all the other vine crops have separate male and female flowers, and the first flowers that typically appear on the vines are predominantly male. So those male flowers will never produce anything. They produce pollen, and you need that, but they'll never produce fruit. The female flowers are easy to spot because they have a little squash right below the flower, and the male flowers have nothing, just a skinny stem. So the first flowers tend to be male, and they're not going to produce fruit.
A little bulb underneath when they're female.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other possibility is we've had a lot of rainy weather.
Yeah.
And the rainy weather tends to inhibit bee activity, so they're not as active, and so you may not get as much pollination. So even though you have female flowers, if you have a lot of rainy weather and the bees are not active, they're not moving the pollen from the male flowers to the female flowers, so you're not getting pollination, and so the female flowers might not develop into fruit either. So that could be occurring too. Now, that should clear up with the recent weather, but that may have been a problem like in June, early July.
Okay, and I'm just starting to see some bees.
So.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Dave. And we've got an email now from Brenda, and she says that she needs to transplant her hibiscus. It's now in the shade, and her husband keeps mowing it down. So she needs to move it, and she wants to know when she can do it and how she should.
Okay, there are different types of hibiscus. I'm assuming this is a herbaceous type that dies back to the ground in the fall. And if that's the case, I would wait till spring. And when you first start to see little growth coming out of the ground, and they kind of emerge rather late in the spring, when they first start to see growth, dig it up immediately and transplant it.
Okay, well, I hope that helps. Or you could put some stakes with flags around it. Maybe that might help your husband out while he's mowing.
Correct.
The number to call with your questions is 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have Jean on the line in Osage. Hello, Jean.
Good morning. I have broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cabbage plants that have brown spots on them. Not just small areas, but big ones, and pretty soon all the leaves, even the brown leaves, fall off. Now, what is causing that?
I would assume it's probably some type of leaf disease. I don't know exactly. We had a lot of rainy weather, and that would be my thought. It's probably some type of leaf disease. Assuming that's the case, you probably can't do anything for this year. But when you, let's say, harvest the crop or destroy the plants, pull them out and clean up all that debris, remove it from the garden, and destroy it.
Okay.
And then next spring, plant your cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower in a different location where they haven't been grown for 2 or 3 years.
All right, I'll do that. And I cut one of the cabbages that looked like it might be all right, and it was just full of those earwigs, just, you know, every layer of the leaves.
Yep, they've been very common this year. The rainy weather has been kind to them. They like that. So, can't do much about them.
Do they eat the cabbage, or what in the world do they eat?
Well, normally they feed on decaying organic matter, rotting things like leaf debris and things like that. And they've done well the last 2 or 3 years because the last 2 or 3 years we've had above normal rainfall. They love that. So they've done quite well the last 2 or 3 years. And they will feed on plants, too. They will feed on flowers and foliage on occasion, and so they can cause damage to plants. They're not going to bite you or hurt you if they get inside the house or if you touch them.
Yes, they are.
They do look quite menacing with their little things in the back, but they really won't bite you, so they don't really harm you, but they're kind of annoying, especially when they get in the house.
Yeah.
So the reason that you found them in your cabbage is they like to hide in tight, moist places.
Yeah.
And so the cabbage was the perfect spot for it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So if you wash that cabbage well and get the earwigs out, it should be fine, though, right?
Right. Right.
Okay. That's good. My son loves earwigs. I know that most people dislike them, but he's 2 and a half, and he thinks carrying an earwig around for a few hours is about the nicest way to spend a morning. So it's good that they have some fans out there. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Patrick is on the line now in Des Moines. Hello, Patrick.
Hi. Yeah, I was calling. I'm growing a lot of mustard in our garden. and we've eaten the greens, and now we've got all the seed pods, and I wanted to make ground mustard out of them. I just wanted to know, how do you know when the pods are ready to pick, and how to get the seeds out?
You know, that's one we don't come across very often. That's a good question. I would wait until the pods are dry and crispy to the touch, so I would probably wait until fall. Although that is a cooler season plant, so it takes, sometimes it'll mature earlier than some of our other plants. So wait until then, and then once they're dry, I'd crack them open and lay them out to dry them. I would also look up, since this is more a food preservation question, I would look up methods of roasting, because I believe that's what you have to do before you can grind them. So so just wait till they're dry, and hopefully you'll have several seeds.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Patrick. And I think we have time for one more call before the break. Evelyn's on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Evelyn.
Hi. I was wondering, how do you transplant Queen Anne's lace, and when do you do it?
Well, that would be hard to do. Queen Anne's lace, the other name for it is wild carrot. And by the way, it is considered a secondary noxious weed in Iowa. It is. But it's a biennial plant. And so the first year, it just develops this clump of leaves fairly close to the ground. And then the second year, it basically grows very rapidly, forms the flower heads, produces seed, and then dies. So as far as trying to establish it, you'd probably want to collect the seeds in the fall and maybe plant the seeds, or dig up a small little seedling in maybe spring, early summer, and then transplant it.
You probably don't get that question very often. I mean, it spreads pretty well, doesn't it?
It freely reseeds itself. Once you have it, it's going to be around for a while. You could not transplant a blooming plant this year because it's going to die anyway as soon as it's done blooming.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Evelyn. Thanks a lot for your call. And we have an email here from Brian, and he says he has a Japanese painted fern. He wants to know what the general rules are for splitting a fern. Should the crown be a certain diameter, and when should he attempt this?
You'd want to do it when it's a nice sized plant. And as far as doing that, I would do that in early spring, just as growth begins to emerge from the ground, dig up the entire clump, and then just take a butcher knife and make some nice clean cuts. And if it's fairly big, you might make three or four selections from that. If it's not very big, maybe just two.
Okay, so that's something maybe you can call us back in the spring, Brian, and let us know how that turned out for you. It's Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa. We're talking plants, as we do every Friday. And with us today are Richard Geron and Jennifer Busolo from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And we'd love to hear from you as well. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or, of course, you can call us. The number is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and we are taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With us today are Richard Geron and Jennifer Busolo from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. It's Jennifer's very first Hort Day, and I hope you'll be back many more times, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And we've got Dave on the line from Des Moines. Thanks for your patience, Dave. What would you like to talk about?
Hi. Two quick fruit questions. The first is my plum tree this year and last year, it seems like it's dropped pretty much all its plums. After they've been fertilized, but they're only about half size, and then they fall off and you can't eat them or anything. I didn't know if... Anyway, I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, this has not been a good year for plums. We're seeing a lot of brown rot with all the rain, where they simply kind of shrivel up, kind of get fuzzy looking and fall off. Can't do much about that. As far as brown rot in the future, you need to start spraying them early, like when they're in bloom, and you have to use something like Captan, which would prevent the brown rot, and then continue that during the fruit development in the spring and early summer. So you could use a home orchard spray the rest of the year, but initially in bloom, something like Captan. If you have a plum that's a hybrid, make sure that you have two different varieties for cross-pollination and fruit set, because most of those are not self-fruitful. If you have the old-fashioned European plums, they are self-fruitful and they will produce by themselves.
Got it. And then I have a couple pawpaws, which I hand-pollinate, but, you know, the pollen and the male and the female flowers there at different times and stuff. So I thought I'd save some in my freezer, but I didn't desiccate it. And, you know, I figured pollen's dry. And I was going to use it next year. My wife says it's a waste of my time. Is that likely to be okay if I didn't, you know, desiccate it or anything? I just kind of stuck it in a jar and put it in the freezer.
Boy, this is a guess on my part. I would be inclined to think probably not, that it probably wouldn't survive that long. That'd be my guess.
I know what you're thinking of, though. You're thinking a lot of plant propagators do that. They keep the pollen, though, in very controlled conditions as far as temperature and moisture content. So if you tried it and it worked, then you're really lucky. but more than likely, that's not going to work.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave. And I'm sorry your wife won that argument. The number to call is 866-780-9100. We've got Shirley on the line in Ames. Hello, Shirley.
Hi, Charity. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
I have a question about my purple fall esters. They're dying. We did transplant some, and I thought that was the problem, but even the ones that haven't been transplanted. And I was wondering if it was because of too much moisture.
Well, they do have a lot of leaf problems, like leaf spots and things like that. That will damage the foliage, turn the foliage brown. So it's not uncommon to see a lot of brown foliage near the base of the plant. That's pretty common. Mm-hmm. But that typically doesn't kill the plant. That damage is more cosmetic than fatal. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on as far as the plants. If they are sitting in a wet, poorly drained site, I could see where they might get a root rot and that might destroy them because they do like a well-drained, moist soil, but not a wet site.
Yeah, no, that really isn't it. And, of course, that's where that started, underneath. Mm-hmm. But now it's just worked its way up, and I don't think, you know, I think they're done. I'll maybe should keep them in, not just dig them out and see if they come back next year. But is that likely?
Well, if I thought the plants were dying, if I thought they were dying, I would be inclined to dig them up and destroy them because it might be some disease. If I have something that I think is dying or dead, I typically want to get it out of the garden in case it could spread to other plants. So that would be my inclination. If I thought they were either dying or dead, I would dig them up and get rid of them.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Shirley. Sorry
bye-bye.
We didn't have better news for you. We've got Dean up next from Dubuque. Hello, Dean.
Yes, good morning. I have a chestnut tree that I had in a small pot in the ground, and the main root got out of it, got maybe 7-8 inches into the ground. Anyway, I dug it up, broke off part of that root, and I put it into the ground in a different place. I watered it pretty well, and the leaves all dried up. I only have like one leaf now. Still has the points on the end of the branches, and I've been watering it. And I'm just wondering, is this tree in hibernation, or is it going? You think it's going to make it through? And be able to leaf out again next year, or has it had it?
Well, I wouldn't be terribly optimistic, but on the other hand, I wouldn't throw in the towel yet. So I would keep on watering it if it's dry, and then wait to see what it does next spring. You'll know next spring
what's
going to happen. But like I said, I don't think the odds are good, but I would still give it care, see what it does next spring, and go from there.
Right, you don't have much to lose.
No, you don't. But I wouldn't be disappointed next spring if it didn't leaf out, that it is dead. I think that's a definite possibility, but I would give it a shot.
Okay, well, I've got another one, too, that I kept in the pot after I dug it out of the ground, and I kept watering that, and nothing happened to that. So, but I hope the other one comes back. Thank you, then.
All right, thanks a lot, Dean. And we've got Charlie up next from North Liberty. Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about mason bees in a garden, how to get those started up, and if they do very well in Iowa. I'm by North Liberty, so I didn't know if they'd do very well in this area.
I don't think we know on that one, but you can call our entomology department here at Iowa State.
Okay, and then I had one other
if you
question
have
also.
If you have a pen and a pad.
I can get the link online.
Okay.
And I had another question, too. If I wanted to start some fall crops like broccoli, can I start them from seed now, or is this a good time? I've dug up my potatoes, so I have an extra space in the garden. So
yeah, I would start those inside about right now. You could
try
broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage. Start them inside and hopefully get them outside maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully they'll produce by fall.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Charlie. We've got an email now from Dave in Cedar Falls who's having some prairie trouble. He says, what is the best way to get Canadian thistles out of a prairie? I've been wicking them with Roundup, but they seem to pop up faster than I can treat them.
I think wicking probably is the best way, where you go out there and kind of spot treat with Roundup. One application won't be enough. You're going to have to come back maybe and do it repeatedly over time, but they have a really deep root system, and typically you have to exercise patience and persistence, and usually if you are, you can do that. So wicking probably is the best way.
All right. I'm sure that's not what Dave was hoping to hear, but we don't always get those answers. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bob is up next in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Bob.
Hi, good morning. My question was about tomato leaf blight. Am I correct in my understanding that that disease resides in the ground and you need to move your tomatoes around so you don't continually expose your new plants to that?
You got that right, Bob. That's exactly it. So from year to year, you want to move any of the solanaceous crops, like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, even potatoes. Move them from a different location in your garden, and that will cut down on the soil-borne pathogen, yes.
Now, is there any application you can put into the soil to get rid of that, or you just have to outlive it by not using that soil?
Right. So it's endemically in the soil, so it'll always be there. The only thing that we can do is cut down its population by removing its food source, like these crops. So unfortunately, there's no way, you can't even solarize or anything to get rid of it entirely. So we just have to live with it, unfortunately.
Okay. The other one quick question is about harvesting potatoes. My potato plants are still readily blooming. Should I disturb them, or when do I dig those up?
Well, it really depends on what size of potatoes that you want. You can start digging up potatoes now, but in general, most people do wait in order to get larger tubers until not just bloom is complete, but basically till frost. So, you can start digging now and get some new potatoes if you'd like.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Bye. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. The number to call is 866-780-9100 if you have some questions about what's going on in your yard or your garden. 866-780-9100. And Luann is on the line somewhere in north central Iowa. Hello, Luann.
Hello, it's Joanne.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. What would you like to talk about?
Just a word of warning to the lady who was talking about transplanting or starting Queen Anne's lace in her yard. I don't have personal experience, but I have a close friend who did that, and it completely took over a very large flower bed. So I would suggest that she enjoy it from the roadside and leave it there.
Okay, thank you very much for your word of warning, which goes along very much with what you were saying earlier, Richard.
It is a weed.
A pretty one.
Yes.
That's a lovely weed.
But weeds tend to be very prolific.
Okay.
And Queen Anne's lace wild carrot is very prolific.
We have an email from Barbara in Boone, and she says that she has wonderful summer squash plants that are producing flowers, but then they die and they don't produce any fruit. What's going on and what can she do about that?
Yeah, I think we answered that before. On the vine crops, we have the male and female flowers, and they're separate. And the male flowers tend to appear first, and they're never going to form fruit. So those first flowers that you might see for a week or two typically tend to be male flowers, and they don't produce anything. But eventually they do produce female flowers. And if we have good weather and good pollinator activity, then eventually we should see quite a few fruit.
All right. We have another email. This one's from Cecile in Iowa City, and she wants to know if a person should remove leaves from Brussels sprouts plants as they grow tall.
That's up to the individual. Typically, I would leave them and simply remove the sprouts and leave the actual foliage. Some people remove the leaves, some people don't. I would be inclined to leave the foliage and just remove the actual sprouts as they develop.
Okay, and she also has another question about a bulb fennel plant. She dug up a bulb fennel plant as the foliage had begun to brown a bit and had a dried blossom on it. When she tried to slice it raw for a salad, the center core was so woody it was inedible. And what did she do wrong there?
More than likely, it was just left too long. She probably just had to harvest it earlier. And then it's still tender. So maybe not wait until the flowering is complete. In fact, the stem usually is better before the flower comes on. So,
okay. Sylvia is on the line at 866-780-9100 from Lake City. Hello, Sylvia.
Hi. We have an 80-year-old lilac tree in our backyard that's about 15 feet high, which lost three of its five major branches in last January's ice storm. The two remaining branches are about 45 degrees leaning, and otherwise it's healthy and it bloomed in June like it normally does. But we're wondering, there's suckers growing at the base of it, and we're wondering if pruning is a good idea or cutting it down is a better option, or if those suckers can be used to start new trees, or any help would be appreciated.
Is this a true tree, like a Japanese tree lilac, or?
Yes.
It is?
Yes, it's a true tree. It has a massive, trunk.
Okay. Well, I would be inclined, I think, to leave the existing tree rather than going with the suckers. And so I would be inclined to remove the suckers and kind of prune the tree so it looks kind of presentable as best I could. But I would try to maintain the existing tree, if I could.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Should she wait any specific amount of time to prune it? Is there a best time to do that?
I would remove the suckers at this point. As far as pruning the tree, I'd probably do that in late March, early April.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call, Sylvia. 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next we have Scott in Iowa City. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a question. I have emerald green arborvitae, a dozen trees that I planted that I want to create screening. And I planted them last fall at the end of the season. I've got new growth, but a fair amount of dead wood at the base of the plant. Can you give me any suggestions on how to maintain them?
Well, I think the key there is the browning might be actually winter damage or winter injury. They are prone to that, especially during the first two or three winters that they're in the ground. And so what I would do is prune out the brown at this point, those areas that are brown.
Okay.
And the remainder of this summer, August, September, October, into November, if it does turn dry, make sure that you go out there and water them periodically. And keep on doing that until the ground actually freezes in November if it's dry. Because you want to make sure that going into winter, they have ample moisture. If they go into winter dry, they're much more prone to winter injury. So make sure they have moisture August, September, October, into November if it's dry.
Okay, great. What about fertilizing these trees?
I don't see a need to. For the most part, when you're dealing with trees and shrubs in Iowa, most Iowa soils are quite fertile, and they can get everything they need directly from the soil. So we typically don't see a need to. If you were to do that, if you wanted to go out there and sprinkle a little bit of fertilizer around the plants, I would do so probably in April, early May.
Okay. Another question for you. I've got a lawn
quickly.
There that was covered, well, it was shaded for a long time by trees. I was recommended by a nursery to use gypsum in the soil. I have a very dry and clay soil under a relatively thin layer of topsoil.
Gypsum doesn't do much good. I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't buy it. If you have a hard clay-type soil, I would aerate the yard where you pull out plugs of soil, and you can do that in September, and you can do that in spring if you need to.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call, Scott. We've got Jay up next from West Point. Hello, Jay.
Hi. Hope you're having a great day. Got pepper plants, and they were going real healthy. Besides the regular fertilizer, I used Epsom salt in the roots, and they did really great and got going real healthy. But now the leaves are getting a blight, and they're yellow, and they're just falling off, and it's starting to spread among the plants, and it's kind of sad once you see them really beautiful, and now they're on the death watch almost.
So these are pepper plants?
Yes.
Okay.
Not just bell peppers, like Anaheim peppers and, jalapenos, all kinds of that.
Well, they probably have some type of foliage disease. I'm not sure exactly what. But at this time of year, it's probably too late to treat. I mean, there are fungicides on the market that you can treat for blights on tomatoes and peppers and things like that. But you typically have to use a fungicide before you see symptoms or the very first sign of symptoms. And once the infection gets widespread, there's just really no good way to control it. So I'm guessing it's too late for this year. So hopefully they'll produce something and you can salvage something from the plants. But once they die, pull them up, get rid of them, destroy them, and then look for a different place in the garden next year for your peppers.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call, Jay. And now we've got Julie in West Des Moines. Hello, Julie.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I'm a landscape designer in the West Des Moines area, and I've got a client who we planted several Carl Forster grasses in their area a couple of years ago. And now they are, last year they took a while to turn to their nice, mature bloom, that nice upright form that they're known for. And this year they are quite floppy. They get plenty of sun, at least a half a day. And looking closer at the foliage, they've got lesions on them, almost like it's a fungus or something. I don't know if it's something with the soil or what that might be.
Well, I've never known them to be floppy. That's one of their enduring characteristics, is they're very upright. So don't know about that. As far as the spotting, there could be some type of leaf spot disease. You could send a sample to the ISU Plant Diagnostic Clinic. They can check that out. But as far as the floppiness, boy, that's hard to explain, because even in the shade, they tend to be upright. They may not be very full, but they tend to be upright. So I'm not sure about the floppiness. Is there a possibility that some other grass species got in there in the clump? Possibly?
I don't know. I'm really not. I don't think so. And they're probably 30 or 20 to 30 of them in this area. So they're all, it's a very, architectural feature of their landscape. And yeah, the floppiness is what kind of surprised me. Other than the they are very full and very healthy and happy, other than, they almost look like they need to be divided, which I suggested, but looking closer, like I said, with those lesions on there, and some of the foliage is just starting to look like it's turning for winter almost prematurely. So well, kind of strange.
That is strange, and I guess I'm inclined to think along the same lines as Richard, that I wonder if there's a possibility a different species got snuck in there when they were dropped off for your site, because that sounds very atypical. Even what you described, their bloom last year wasn't the same, makes me also think that if there's any possibility that you have a different species or at least a different cultivar in there.
Yeah. I mean, I sent it to the nursery too, and I mean, they agreed it was Carl Forster's, because I've got from last year, a spring photo of the early season bloom when it's not mature, and then the late season in the fall, and it looked exactly like it was supposed to. So it's hard to believe if it's not Carl Forster, but
well, it sounds like a real stumper. I'm sorry we couldn't come up with a great solution to that one. Julie, thank you so much for your call. We are out of time today. Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. We'll be back next week with Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa was produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon, and technical support in Ames from Tom Otting. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Charity Nebbe.